So hello everyone, welcome to the last reading of the Jerome Stern Student Writers Series for the fall semester. We're so glad to see such a full house and thank you all for being here with us this semester.
Before we get started, I do want to remind you that you should feel free to get a drink or use the restroom, but please try to be respectful of our viewers and do it just as quietly as possible. And please, of course, silence your cell phone. And if you could be so kind as to join me in welcoming the person introducing our first reader, Dusty Pearson.
So, it's my honor to introduce Coco. Coco's poetry is expansive. It's mythological and domestic, generational and cultural, historical and geographically resonant. As Coco writes personally, Black women are at the center of her poems, as well as New Orleans and its melange of vibrant cultures. Each of Coco's poems contain music that urges one to speech. Every time I try to read Coco's poetry in silence, I can only manage a few lines before I fill in whatever space I'm inhabiting with their sounds. But as satisfying as it is to read Coco's poetry aloud, to be compelled to, I come to the sharp realization that my voice, its tones and rhythmic tendencies, never quite deliver the poems comfortably or confidently the way I imagine they are intended to be delivered. In this way, I believe Coco's poems are aware of themselves and their audience. Even though the poems warrant being performed, their performance is not easily appropriated. Further, I believe that this can only mean that Coco's poems are faithful to and protective of their subjects, which I, like James Baldwin and Trayvon Martin, am happy to be included in. Coco Williams is a PhD student in African American literary and cultural studies with a minor concentration in American modernism and Black diasporic modernism. Her dissertation explores the impact of museum culture on African American arts and letters. She holds a BA in English and a BA in philosophy from Belfast State University, and she completed an MA in English at Clemson University in 2007. I haven't been producing yet. It's all right. Coco Williams is a recipient of the McKnight Dissertation Fellowship, EO Scholar Award, and the Ruth Yost Memorial Scholarship, the Leslie Ann Wilson on Zen Assistantship, and the Brian Hall Teaching Award. Her poetry has been published in Dogwood, Journal of Poetry and Prose, Ninth Letter, College Language Association Journal, and December Magazine. Coco is currently working on a digital humanities project which seeks to create an interactive online museum. But she lives in Tallahassee with the rest of us. Coco Williams, everybody.
Read your work. So I thank each and every one for coming out tonight. And I think the reading series organizers, thank you very much. Time.
first poem that I'm going to read today is entitled She Poses. It's after an etching of Phyllis Wheatley that was included in her, as a part of her attestation material. She poses for Phyllis Wheatley. She poses, eyes fixed somewhere beyond that room, not her own. The room which holds her enthralled in a frame that measures her name against his name, an equation of his own imagination, as if it is a convex mirror, distorting what is real for what is imagined. She considers, her index finger pressed against her cheek, her eyes searching for the place beyond the frame that is made for her, ship that carries her on, ship she carries on her back, a petite name of her peculiar condition in search of a word. Moorhead knew the words were written. She does not write. To be an artist and a slave is to pose forever, to sit for a painting that never cures. Knew too, as Wheatley knew, in the depths of looking back and coming back, what is written is not what is seen. Take away the stage, table and chair, perhaps the same ones used at her authorly inquisition, quill pen and ink basin, the unmarked Bible, perhaps. Take away the bonnet and let loose her woolly hair. Take away the trappings of white womanly grace borrowed from her silent mistress. Loosen the black thread about her neck, and we are left with the stare, contemplative moment undressed before us, waiting to be. Where does she go? On which shore is she born back? To the place where you lose your mother? How does she learn to do it? To come back, ease her gaze, forget what was and become what is, to lose your mother with each eye's blink back. The next poem is entitled Adonis Has a Nightmare. When Adonis has a dream of death, he goes to the sable Venus, leaves his pale mistress behind to see what paint this conjure woman might lend to his dark omen. He sails to a new world where he kisses black Madonna's feet, her burning heart in her hand. She leads him to the black throne of sable Venus, who sits under a flutter of butterflies, where he nestles his head on her pubis, looking like a child who wants to drain the other breast, tells her his story, waiting for her head to split open, spill its secrets into his palms of what is past and what is to come. She coos a reprieve on his load. He asks what he owes. She moves her blood lips to his. One sweet kiss shall pay his debt. She smiles, and he turns toward his Venus at home, where he does not hear the door close behind. Only black Medusa laughs. This poem is also a poem about myths, which I love. This is called Lita. I'm a student in my projects, and you know the story of Zeus and she didn't follow it. Lita on a stoop in the St. Bernard Projects, 1974, New Orleans. That night, Lita, hot from frying chicken, leaves the kitchen window open. A white fowl lands on the table. Her father watches good times in the next room while cleaning his rifle. When she came to, her parents shook their heads at her white dress soiled by blood. I told you about leaving that window open, her mother said. But her father said nothing, went to his room, closed the door, and she never set eyes on him again. When Lita got big, everyone said what a shame that her mother even let her out of the house. pushing that belly in our faces like that, forcing us to act kind. We see her behind her back. It must be this year's Thanksgiving turkey, if she is. Besides, Nita didn't know. She never went to the doctor. Was too afraid to let another white-coated bird touch her down there. So she delivered twin boys, Warrior and Wisdom, on the kitchen floor. They grew up as ordinary as their infancy would allow them, plucking through their youth. One started a bank. The other lived out his days on the kill line in the chicken. So this next poem, I was just referencing the Johnny Club, which is a term my mother told me about, fire hydrants. So this is it's a poem about a found photograph in the memory album, playing in the Johnny Club. They warm in the outermost ring, then go back in. Circles of children collapse in on each other like the rings of a spinning top. A ring around the rosy for children whose play is as essential as breathing, but choked out by signs that tell them, no, you cannot play. Like my father said, there were pools, but we couldn't go there. But they may do, create play where they will, take fires from the tools their fathers bring to work, and unlock that which is blocked to them, and swim. In shorts and t-shirts, some bare-chested, they mind. They butterfly and scissor kick, backstroke and wave, but they do not wait for play. They are action. See the young man, older than the others, bend over the plug with braced arm on the end of a long wrench to open it wider, let the water flow for the children. See the smallest of them, a young girl, run right toward the glass, arms stuck in the full swing of sprinting. The boys, too concerned with their own fun, do not let her break away from the order they have created. It is not her turn. This is the moment of the snap. Someone in an apartment across the courtyard hears the sound of children playing, hears the giggle and shouts of one of her own, goes into the bedroom and pulls out a camera from the catch-all. Nothing else to do but wait. Wait for it. This moment of spontaneous energy and snap, the picture of a girl like my mother, playing in the Johnny Club, because no pool would take her. This is entitled Another Single Book. Prince Charming danced with Cinderella, face as black as soot, danced all night, but took too long to look. Seek her out, find her tender face among the rose colored cheeks. Took too long to tell her that her face is ebony gold, that he would love her in spite of the murmurs of those who watched the mystery of their dance, who shuddered at their interlocking fingers as they shuddered perhaps at Zeus's feathered breast against Leda's milky skin, frightened into heated bosom, webbing each other to a dream that could not be, while he danced and his leaden tongue protected him from the hooded feet. Without the promise she wished for before the midnight hour, she rushed away to hide the face he could not love, but left behind her mirrored slipper in search of a looking glass that would confirm what she already knew. A prince could never love a face as dark as hers. In the months following his belated search, he waited. She waited, face as black as coal. She carried into the chimney, soot darkening her already charred feet. until there was a knock at the chamber door, and before those plain-faced maids could hobble down the stairs to try on for size, the prince and Cinderella met, had a private doorway meeting. He never not knew it was her. This is important. Decided it would be best to be friends, that loving for them had not yet come, so they set the stage for a fairy tale. He chooses the comeliest of the sisters and claimed her for his wife, though he had never met her, and she knew too, but with marriages, it never matters anyway who the bride is. Cinderella absconded the stairs, threw shattered glass over the floor, then swept up the shards while her feet bled, because those were the only shoes that she owned. Her dress hung at the window in the twilight. As it rocked back and forth, it cast a shadow on her mother's tree, a body hanging from the window or the garden. The title of this next poem is Z Visits the Gun Factory for Trayvon Martin. The invitation was automatic, implied, like a statesman's dinner. His host, eager to show off his collection, show Z how it's really done. Sight, grip, barrel, trigger, and frame, made of aluminum and steel. May I was the victim of the day, but nothing for sale. Today, nobody to enjoy the firm press of the steely trigger pointing. Nobody today, just virgin steel and capable hands. So, as Dustin sort of implied, I'm from New Orleans originally. So, I love to write about everything related to jazz and jazz funerals and parade. So, this is a jazz funeral after a photograph of Louise Nelson at the jazz funeral of Nelson. We all know it takes a woman to lead a second-line funeral, to marshal the crowd into a frenzy of handkerchiefs overhead, a dull of doves that flap just above fingertips, a rest in peace that beats horns and trumpets signaling like Gabriel to fling open heaven's fences. Someone's coming home, away from a home that hunts and haunts but does not forgive for 20 years, then forgives, loves, and shuns, then beats piano keys, black and white and blue, to a tune of a nasty jazz. Tradition is gone, the old folks say, as they ask, how your mama now? They stand on porches to watch the parade too, to see the woman barefoot dance on a body not yet consecrated, coffin headed for the cemetery, they say, this ain't the way we used to do it, but let the young ones have their way. Jazz is a living thing, and these men now coffined are dead, and those that complain might as well be dead too. So they stay out of the way while she shuffles atop the box. They see the power in her dance as she wheels the vessel further in her white tuxedo tail. There is no mistaking her rank, because a woman waving her club's fan crowns this marshaller's head in feathers. How's everyone doing? Oh, good. Ode to smoking candy cigarettes. I guess the only thing that you need to know about this poem was a reference to Start the Food Store. It's a famous grocery store in New Orleans that is a circle. The doctor asks again, as if she knows I am lying, if I'm a smoker. And I say no, but it's the kind of no you say when the truth is some far off galaxy, the place where I smoke candy cigarettes on the stoop outside on Elodie's in Lafitte with Latoya, my cousin. We beat the pack of Popeyes or Stallions against the wide, outstretched palms of our left hands, then pull the red dye through the cellophane wrap, leaving the bottom intact to catch all of the powder white sugar we would chase later with cold drinks and pop rocks. Opening the top only requires a flip of the wrist, but selecting a cigarette was the beginning of real pageantry. Sometimes we were women of leisure, sliding out a cigarette as we imagine one removes silk gloves from a satin purse. Other times we were street women, pulling out as fast as the men who cursed and then fucked them, balancing the tips of our cigarettes between silence and trash talk. Most often, we were our mothers, our aunts, and our sisters, a choreography lost like the puff of sugar from the smoldering tip of these childhood memories, lost in rings as perfect and as wide as Circle Food Store, as if our play had brought it into being.
This last song is from my mother. It's entitled New Orleans 2010, and it begins with the epigraph of James Baldwin. Now, though I was a stranger, I was home. When we talk of progress, of generations moving uptown, I think of going back home to New Orleans, living in that high-rise apartment overlooking the bayou, where Reginae and I fed the ducks as children. So close to my old home, I could walk back there, but I never did. Except that one time, I rode my bike, forgetting how treacherous the roads that lead back home are, how they jut and break apart and fold over like napkins. It is hard work getting back to that place, just around the corner from luxury living in New Orleans. Here, one reality is always one block away from another. I often wonder if that's why tourists love New Orleans so much. It's like Skull Island to them, another land before time where black skin and white hostess dinner jackets greet you with that old familiar tune, a tune I can hear in the spokes of the bike trying to bear me back to the first home in my childhood memory, just around the corner where I was mid-city living, and that house, just around the corner from where my mother and father grew up in the project. We could mark our progress in three square blocks. Maybe when I have children, one of them, a daughter, perhaps, will move downtown and say, mother used to live 10 minutes away from here, and her mother just a few blocks away from there. And we would have made it somewhere, not far, but distant. Thank you.
Instruction as well. The
kind of instruction the boy never did. Self-defense. And if we think about that term, self-defense, the implication is that not just your body or your sex is subject to threat, but also your soul. And there's another more insidious implication, that the task of defense is your own, and failure is your failure. I wish y'all could have met the child that her aunt was, and most of all, I wish Tanya could have met her, because she was magnificent, both clever and kinder. And also wiser because she was clever and kind. She believed in things like justice. I don't believe justice exists. No one in my adult life is ever going to meet that child. She is not here. She simply no longer exists. Except, of course, in my imagination of what I should be like. I don't even have her face. Do you understand? I am talking about internal changes, but there are external, irrevocable manifestations. It's not about weight, fine lines, or the acne I've developed in my 30s. The shape of my face is different from hers. All I can do is plain bored. I know that I am doing this introduction wrong by talking so much about myself. But there is a way that Tanya Gray's fractal-like work demands introspection. As Tanya writes, everywhere holds a mirror. And you may think that line is the speaker talking to herself. I certainly did the first time I read it. But it's not. That's the speaker talking to us. Her readers. And though I'm doing this wrong, let me point out that there are far greater wrongs. What am I supposed to say to that lost child? When Donald Trump is president? When Brett Kavanaugh is a Supreme Court justice? Woo! What am I supposed to tell my students? When a 21-year-old English major is shot and killed by a man she didn't know, a man who felt he was entitled to sex with women, a man who was homicidal because he was celibate. Don't ask me to make sense of that. You make sense of that. All I can say is that there are stakes, okay? And these are some of the stakes. The question that underlines Tanya's poetry is not why, but how. As in, how did we get here? And that is an existential question, to be sure, but it also isn't. For example, Tanya might be asking herself right now, how did we get here, Eleanor? And that wouldn't be an existential question. That would be a rational question. To put it more compactly, Tanya's speaker is in search of an origin story. She looks to science, but also to fairy tale, myth, and religion. And she is tempted by original sin. Because when you're a woman, the here of how did we get here so often feels like a punishment. Tanya's speaker is stuck in a loveless marriage, doing work that neither rewards nor challenges, and yes, she's unfaithful to her husband, but her punishment precedes this crime. As her husband says to her, if you would just be a better wife, a better mother, like my mother, an impossible task. But you get the impression that at some point the speaker tried to accomplish this absurd act. And it is for this attempt, more than anything else,
that she is punished, and perhaps justly so. It is one thing to betray another person. It is another thing to betray yourself. The motion of Tanya's brilliant book, Undoll, is spiral, like the DNA double helix, like light itself. Still, that makes it difficult to speak precisely about a beginning, middle, or end. What I will say is that over the course of the book, we see the speaker at a point where she no longer wants or needs approval from men. And she no longer fears their disapproval, which, when you think about it, is quite a feat. This point might not be an ending necessarily, it certainly isn't happily ever after, but it is a kind of freedom, and this freedom is less lonely than the speaker's younger self might have imagined. Because she is not just accompanied, but buoyed, lifted up by women, by the poets she admires and uses for sections, epigraphs, and sexton, Margaret Atwood, Elizabeth Bishop, and Audrey Wright, by her genetic predecessors, as Tanya describes them, an exponential line of ancestral mothers holding ground. Here I am, wherever here is, anyway. And finally, by my favorite female in the books, the one from the poem To Come Undone. As Tanya writes, those bare-faced women I used to study, whose eyes scolded mine, knew one day I'd shrug at the mirror and say, so, but I can't say it better than your poem. I realized while I was writing this introduction that I take your work very, very personally. You're not just a poet I admire, you're also a terrific friend and mentor. I'm so lucky to have you in my life, so I don't have to ask myself, what would Tanya do? I can take that to you. What are you, Tanya? What are you? Tanya's debut poetry collection, Undoll, is forthcoming with Yes Yes Books, and it was a finalist for the National Poetry Series, with many, many, many other book prizes. She has poems and essays out or forthcoming in American Poetry Review, Plowshares, Prairie Schooner, Agni, Ohio Review, Post Road, Poets.org, and many, many others. Please join me in welcoming to the stage an incredibly talented, accomplished poet, my friend, Tanya Gray!
And also for the honor and privilege of reading with Coco Williams tonight. I'm never big on reading between my poems, but I'm going to try to set a few up. I apologize if you've heard a few of these before. I am going to try a few that I haven't read in public before. So we'll just give it a roll.
I believe in you!
Okay, well, that's a good thing. I also like Coco go to myth for a lot of structure, and so I'm going to start out and then not read it.
The girl's a queen, she's with Kai!
Is it better or just he's off? Is it better?
Perfect.
Okay. I just thought it'd pop loud, not so much. So the first one I'm going to read is Leaping, and this reference is a mythological river in the underworld. I really loved reading Dolores' Book of Myths when I was a kid, so all of it really stuck. And Lethe is the river of forgetting.
For all the fish, the little blessings that I missed, maybe I should just thank you. We can leave the dress behind that didn't fit, or fly to a new city, and wear the metropolis as our skin. Things happen. How one love becomes another, and seasons maybe. It's okay to remember how I lived multitudes of lives. Where does oblivion begin? Years I tried to forget and be reborn, not as a naiad, no. I want feathers and dark. Let me be the hunter. According to Virgil, I'm almost ready. But if long to stay, I should know how I got here. Have I been drinking your water so long I've erased whole passages? Maybe I'll forget. I forget everything. Oblation. Yeah, I recognize that we spend time in stirrups, but guys kind of get it in the end of the room. There's a pleasure to that. Just saying. Oblation. My gynecologist asks if others may watch. I consent, already numb, why not? There should be an audience for this end. An antiphon could be written in the hum of machinery and whir, my feet cold on metal stirrups, my legs bent high in a squat. I tune the sterile out. After today, I won't have a period. That punctuation I prayed for at times will disappear. He tells me I will feel some pressure, a little pinch, then dilate wide. My cervix, my eyes, a laparoscopic camera enters my universe, reveals on the monitor a contrast to anatomy diagrams of an inflamed red trumpet, aloft aglow, carnations, white feathers, heaven inside of me. The whole room presses close to the screen. I turn my head away as we tear the crate apart. This one is called Matryoshka. That's the nesting dolls. A little bit of a cliche. I try to make it different, maybe not. Matryoshka. One by one they go, as I head to work and then the reverse. My mother made me, knees in a vine, standing between two mirrors. I see ripples in the pool, spilling out. Every choice goes on forever, inscribing the vinyl record, this galaxy carousel. Sometimes I need to feel unique and responsible and alone. In the car last week, my teenager said, it doesn't matter what I do, she will be okay. Deja vu. All the same words I told my mother and my mother hers, like Fibonacci's parlor trick, a shape repeating itself, a strange loop of self-reference, the vortex seen from above, a cut tree, layers and layers of ringing. My daughter wraps her arms around me and says good morning before making her own eggs. Proof enough, somewhere inside I am fetal, my mother inside me and hers, and the day goes on. I do like writing in fragments sometimes, so this one is a fragmented poem. Stupefied. Words leave no bruise. I connect the zines, watching $20 shampoo drain. Overhead, a pop-up balloon floats, cursor blinking, waiting for the edit. A subroutine runs and searches the mess, dumping random drawers in a mad rummage, finding the remote, the prodigal sock, choice retorts of hours ago. Take Faulkner and Darwin string, how to reconstitute a scrambled egg, collect the power dairies, pink, blue, red, and medicate like Pac-Man, num, 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 yes. Here in the shower, numb in the flow of white noise, my filaments tangle, a rat coming wild. Gaskets could blow a shockwave out, the crown intestine unwound in one cleanse, erasing marginalia of wrongs, guilt, fattening food for the last goat penned, standing fast in this rain, holding just cause, a thing is said, don't think so. Okay, I owe this next one and it may not work reading it out loud to you, but I'm going to try. I owe this one to Robert Browning from Mass Duchess, and I owe it to Andrew Epstein for introducing me to the world of FLARF. If you take Remax, you have to know FLARF. You put a phrase into the internet, and it will spit something back at you. I tried this, got a whole bunch of results, and decided I actually had FLARF in my own life. So this is a found poem heard from my home, brought live to you. So that the repetitions don't get overpowering, I've redacted them, but just know they all start if you adjust. If you adjust, be a better wife, a better mother, like my mother. Get off the computer, off the phone, have dinner ready when I get home. If you would just stop spending money, just wash my clothes, clean them, pay attention to the kids, stop spoiling the kids, taking their side over mine. If you would just rub my hair, stop playing with the dog, rub my back, would just put the book down, touch mine, blow me, then go to sleep. If you would just help me with the business, stop acting like my boss, would just leave the business alone, get a job, you. Make it all about your job. Realize your check doesn't pay the bills. If you would just see I'm not one of your students, see, you're just like your mother. You, it's all about you. So depressed, such a nutbag. If you would just talk about it, spend time with me. Stop talking, I'm trying to watch TV. Just try harder, be content, just change, problem solved. If you would just act like you give a damn, care more about what I think than stop pissing me off. Say fuck all the time. Just fuck me. Initiate. If you would just not bait me and make me yell, stop yelling. I'm gonna yell. Not be such a bitch. Just let it go. Come on. If you would just never mind, it's like talking about fucking wrong. Just die. Stay. Little context. The Google Earth effect. Visible from space, my house sits on a little river. Or at least from satellite view, where I see the vertebrate arrangement of lots and streets. A red hot balloon pinpoints the spot I've been lost all these years. Call it still life with joystick. In this virtual diorama, I fly low where nothing moves. No cars, no cats, no matter the lawn, and straight back to play home. If I were a stranger, I might picture the people inside, but the door is closed and blinds drawn, and there's no hint at all of yelling. Who understands the ones that are in it? I find myself rotating the view straight above to look for the all-seeing eye, or at least the sky on that day, and pan up and out and over. I love that one of my professors when I was an undergrad told me that in Little Women, there's this line that Marnie Wade says that she's angry every day of her life. I'm like, see, it's all in love. This is a little longer. I've never read this one in public. I'm trying out a few things like that. I hope they go well. Patience is a force. Tie a knot and hold on. For 10 minutes are mile markers on the road. Drive home from work as heat rises from the asphalt. Cars, two lanes of traffic you absently cut off. Virtue, doubt, the ring of fire. Sound the alarm. How long before this pariah triggers the pyre? The whole system swarming out, piling its logs and kindling quick to light. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. Pick up the kids and listen as they replay their day. And then bicker over the radio. Tune out. Plausible deniability. No need to mention the subject, as anonymous is to name, infinitive is to action, to stay in the air, to flee fugar, to feel sentir, 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 home around the corner, first you look for this trunk, and out of it. The problem with you is, you should, if you would just, then everything would be better. We're never going to be okay until you see the half moon wane above the door. Inhale and enter. Let the dogs out, make dinner. See the girl make a calendar of graph paper, her scrolled wings to 18. Press against the window. Watch her scotch tape months to years, a rosary of counting days. Does all prayer have an end in mind? Navigate with scissors, sheer latitude and longitude, the promise of land, the crow flies, time, introvert. Check homework for the youngest, the one who never asks why the couch is dad's bed. Move slow, move small. Under pressure, constantly moving, under its own weight, a glacier forms where snow outlives the melt. The slow deform and flow of stress, the weight of water, the speed of friction, of crack and crevasse, mountains calve into the sea. Mountains calve into the sea of friction, of crack and crevasse, the weight of water, the speed, the slow to form and flow of stress, where snow outlives the melt, under its own weight, a glacier forms, under pressure of constantly moving, like counting knots on a rope and holding. Oblivion is the place time forgets. Suburbia, hell, even Odysseus took a number in purgatory. Hope is another name. Solitary confines the condemned beyond weight. Mind in a house, words in static, where they said, who listens these days? 99 bystanders against the wall. Downtown on Church Street, a sun-leather woman moves her cart past locals, past tourists, a living erasure and a grimy magic t-shirt. She hums, you don't see me. When I was a kid, I had a grease obsession. I drove my mother crazy with that album and movie. I just about killed her with it. So this is something that represents it. Rizzo's song. There are worse things I could do. I sang full voice in my girl pink room, driving my mother crazy and wore out the vinyl, the irony, the foreshadow of teenagers mezzo like Stockard Channing, my own range. I played on the down low until you, how I hated you at first, unaware, our high school operetta no different. Reading Romeo and Juliet and watching Zeffirelli, me sneaking out my window to catch midnight movies at AMC, run Rocky Horror in the Grove. The canon of John Hughes, a skipping school at Cranmer and coming home tan and catching hell and fire and holding hands at Dayland and Bayside and the falls and hallways and all the notes and cards and bears and you teaching me how to drive stick and your dad's old Carmandia and kissing slow and playing games and the way you cried laughing at something I'd say and the sex at Alice Wainwright, even the sky and the Renaissance, the splendor. No one else understood our moon phases and tides, like pregnant, then not, in the hospital, and my parents, and you at boot camp, and long distance engaged, and that pool party, and the rape of that call, and breaking up, and other boys, and me being so aloof, and never getting back to that place when we could just lie together, spoons in the room. Could I never say the truth? That half bottle of Percocet and wine coolers, fly my Malibu upside down through a tomato field. I can feel and I can cry. A fact I bet you never knew. That first kiss at Ocean Reef on your birthday, or sitting in chemistry, thinking I didn't see you in the bleachers while I cheered, or in a crowd, or that first time underneath the water tower, the dew already rising, the dog star on the hem of night's skirt pulled down from my. This poem I also have read in public.
with this is the last silhouette. It's for Anna Mendieta, an artist. If you're not familiar with her work, I really encourage you to Google. She has a series called Silhouette, the Silhouette series of a woman's form. Often they're depressions under the earth, and I just kind of shook when I first saw them, and this came out of it. And there's an epigram, and it says something that she said at one of her expositions. She died suddenly in the pulmonary system. This is the epigram. I have been carrying out a dialogue between the landscape and the female body based on my own silhouette. Another morning fight out of nowhere. Another migraine zigzagging the edge of my eyes. I close the door to dress, catch hold of myself in the window, diaphanous in twin dimensions and nude, transposed with oak, melting navel and clit, viburnum and blue-red blue is spilling the silhouette of him. I've been praying not to wake. Now you angel in my mind's eye, with arms raised above the city in the same painting light. Before neighbors report the yelling, your insides gnawing out the dream. Were you facing when the sky reversed, 34 floors, warm, attenuating gravity, grasp your cadmium red? That little voice that said, you would never. Thank you guys for me. Lots of ice cream, suburbia. I have to thank Barbara Hamby for that title.
Yay, Barbara!
So it's an epigram in Latin, but basically is if you want peace, prepare for war. Today I slammed the door so hard the house fell behind me. If any ring remains of rubble and consequence, my salt heart agape and foe to construct the shape of the hole just before. This was my war. I did not shrink to fit. Remarks landing around the enemy, fire almost out when fury came. The seam rip of thunder, a rush of mothers howled through my mouth burst wide. The mothy swarm blackened the room, curling tables, smashing plates, launching the oven and washer through the window. The white life I lived lay waste, and the shock of it rang. The door was the end, as in the day of Lot and the host and hailfire, except I refused to look back and kept walking.
Good idea.
It's short. How to care for a narcissist. He calls again to say he's upset. I'm making it difficult for him to feel close to her. How I conjure this dissonance, his brittle timber filling my ear, his want too easily at home. Of course, it's his erection in the door. I'm trying to close, muscle memory pushing in. Oh, the charm, I'm all out of awe. He's voracious, carrot and stick, his lashing out. I mute the phone, ignore his text, and finally block his number. Sure, I'll miss the sex. His eyes, my eyes reflecting fools. You and my name. Wait, beautiful. Thank you guys so much for coming and thank you for listening. Thank you. Undolled. Some lives are so twisted in the belly. Throat blue and airless, corset bound. I have no arms left in your packaging to hold back cellophane, the walls boxed. Your memory trails the way of an elephant, oversized for a single room. I am strung out, hungry, awake. Hunger is entropy, ever after. I swallow the night, I swallow the left side of the bed, and pull the pregnant covers over my eyes. Abiding with you, because you are too much to swallow. Because yesterday's special
is today's leftover. The tongue diagrams the taste. I diagram the same years. Spoon and cup, ocean and blanket. We have no bones, so I drag you with me. There is nothing to say now. I remember your hands calloused and all want. Our whole is a fractal of everything. I can see the pieces. I see mine coming back.
Let's have another round of applause for Tommy Ray.
Please do remember to buzz your tables before you leave tonight. We wanted to thank you all again for joining us this semester for the Jerome Stern Distinguished Writer Series. This is the last reading of the semester, so we will see you all again in January.
Ladies and gentlemen, if I could have your attention for just 1 second. Unless you've done it before, you cannot imagine the amount of work that goes into this. Publicity, recording, back rubs, free drinks, and it's all done by the irrevocable, incandescent, unforgettable, ladies and gentlemen, would you lose your shit for Matt Winslow and Laura Lathrop?